This is New Home Insights, the John Burns Real Estate Consulting Podcast. I'll be your host, Dean Worley. As the title promises, we're going to bring you insights into everything housing, latest trends, innovations, observations, and issues of the day. We'll bring in colleagues here at John Burns and also some major industry players from all across the country. This podcast is going to be quick, fun, but also hopefully make you think. So see you here every couple of weeks. Now let's get to it. Welcome to the latest episode of New Home Insights. That's the podcast that brings you, you know, insights about new homes. It's right there in the title. We hope that'd be obvious. Today, we're going to talk with the legendary Margaret Whalen about something I think that we'll all be talking a lot about in the very near future, and that is off-site home construction. So let me introduce Margaret here real quick. She is a veteran of over 20 years on Wall Street. In residential real estate industry, and to provide strategic and financial counsel to leaders, both public and private, in the U.S. and all over the world. Actually, Margaret, you're at the forefront of innovation in the housing industry, and have been for a while. One of those key innovations is going to be off-site construction. So let's start by just telling us real quick. You know, how did you become involved with this innovation in the housing industry?
Sure. Hi, Dean. Thanks for including me on your podcast. Hi.
Thanks for being here. I'm sorry, I should have had you introduce yourself. Margaret, please introduce yourself.
Okay. I've been enjoying listening to your melodic voice for the last few months. I'm happy to be included. Offsite, you know, it's a great question. So many of the homes that are built in the U.S. on the single family side are stick built. And I have a global footprint personally because I grew up in Europe but moved to the U.S. in 1994 after I graduated from university. And I moved here to work. I started working on Wall Street right away and have been working now with housing companies for more than 20 years. My first position was at UBS, and I was a global head of housing research. So I would travel all over the world, not just, you know, to Canada or to Mexico, but to Europe and to Asia, and would always wonder why we were building houses the way we built them in the U.S., which is very rudimentary. It's kind of 50, 60 years behind most of our colleagues globally. And so I had a big interest in it, I think, because affordability is very important to me. I think the fact that housing and home ownership creates more stable local economy is important. And offsite is a cost effective way to build and sell homes.
Yeah. Just give us a quick, you know, what exactly is, let's step back at, you know, 30,000 feet kind of a thing. What does it mean to say we construct a home offsite?
Sure. It's a good idea because everything is on a spectrum. And I find anytime I'm talking to others about it, we often get confused and muddled about the terms and what they mean. So when I talk about offsite, what I'm talking about specifically is pre-cutting lumber in a controlled environment in a factory, that lumber then gets brought to the job site as a kit, and it's installed via a crane. And that can take 10 plus days out of a 14-day framing cycle for a traditional 2,500 square foot home.
I've heard some folks have, tell me if this is gross oversimplification, but this idea that it's almost like doing kind of a giant Lego set.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it's like. And, you know, we've got framers and turnkey framers and shell operators around the country who I consider to be super subs. They're bringing floor trusses, roof trusses, wall panels. In some cases, the wall panels are pre-cut for services, MEP. They're fitted with insulation, foam board. Yeah. We saw that at the KB Show House. It's going to be on view in February 2019. And they are installed very quickly, very efficiently, with a huge level of precision and much less waste. It's estimated that on our job sites, we waste about 30% of the materials. And in Europe and Asia, it's closer to 2 or 3%. Wow. So when you consider that more than half of the cost of building a house is sticks and bricks, and you consider that there's a way to dramatically reduce the amount of waste, that leads to a more cost-effective proposition for a home builder to offer the consumer, makes the house more affordable. Another important variable, though, is that if a builder can take 10 plus days out of a 100 build cycle, then that's 10% improvement in efficiency. And often they're building twice a year, two inventory cycles. So they can improve their cash flow and their return on capital pretty meaningfully by leveraging this opportunity.
So there's, but it sounds like there's multiple folks involved at the beginning. You said trusses and foam boards and the lumber and such. Is that, that's true? So there'd be multiple offsite construction companies or companies doing this that are providing all the different materials that go into the home. Is that fair to say?
No, the way this plays out, Dean, is that it's one super sub that is doing all of this. And essentially they build the house twice. The first time they build it in 3D through some kind of BIM software online, and they rationalize the plans, they iron out the kinks, they find any bottlenecks. And once they've done so, then they run that software through the machinery in their factories, and that dictates how the lumber is pre-cut. And that in turn puts a kit that's, like you said, a Lego box. It's all numbered. It's all assembled numerically. It's put on the back of a flatbed truck. It can be delivered up to about a 300-mile radius from the factory and installed by crane within a couple of days.
Wow. Does it have the super annoying IKEA-type numbers that with almost no explanation and just a diagram that no one can follow? There's always a missing Allen wrench. Does it have that?
We have personal experience of that in our home with IKEA furniture and cribs and things for our kids. So I've lived it. It kind of needs to come at a 6-pack of beer just to make it all worthwhile.
At least. And
no, I think it's actually much easier and more efficient because the house plan has already been built in 3D. I think it's a lot simpler. In fact, you see a lot less paperwork and frustration at the job site because these pieces they're built with such precision that they're easier to assemble.
Okay. So, okay, now we're going to start doing this more and more in the U.S. Where is it going to change? Is this process going to be different as it migrates into the U.S., you think?
No, I don't think it needs to be different. I think that's one of the real opportunities for the U.S. that we can do something. We don't have to be pioneers. We can do something that's been very successfully done in the past. And it's actually already been done on a small scale around the U.S. We do have big truss manufacturers. We do have big shell contractors who will sell a builder a kit for about $40,000, $50,000, depending on the size of the house, primarily depending on the size. And then they'll go in and set all of this up for them. And so it's already being done. The question is, why isn't it being done more? And actually, one of the interesting surveys that Todd put out on your team from the building products companies is that more than 25% of the builders are already using some kind of turnkey solution, and more than 50% want to.
Wow.
It's concentrated geographically. The big challenge, the NAHB did an interesting survey in June as well about this, and they do it every June. And the big challenge that their builder customers and members stated was just there's not enough scale. It's not available enough to them, but if it was, they would use it more often.
So we're not quite at that critical mass yet where it becomes even easier and it just grows and grows and grows.
I think that we're very close for a couple of reasons. My personal view, I've been saying this for a while, is that we're all going to look back on 2018 as the inflection point for when offsite really took over. And it took over and started to grow and to be accepted, because until now it's not really been accepted in the U.S. That's one of the reasons it hasn't really grown. But the reason I say that is primarily because of what I do, which is raising capital. And the capital that's coming into this industry asset class right now, the growth is exponential. You know, it's doubling, tripling every year. So we have not just folks like Katerra who are getting a lot of media attention and who are doing a very nice job, but Integra, which is the European team that set up a factory in Northern California, got an investment from LP, Louisiana Pacific, earlier this year. And I think that tells you that the wood products companies are looking at and saying, okay, we don't want to be displaced. We want to add value. It's going towards install sales. Let's be a part of the solution. CertainTeed, which is a global insulation company, made an investment in a company in New Hampshire earlier this year, Benson Homes, which is a modular company. And so I think that when you look at the dollars coming in, there's a lot of investment in construction technology companies, which are primarily software, BIM, and property technology companies, which are essentially consumer interfacing. But all of this is increasing the digitalization of our industry, which is very important.
So I think you just actually answered my next question, and tell me if you want to expand though, is that, you know, what are the catalysts for offsite construction? Why, what's different now that will make it more accepted this time around?
I think there are two big ones. One is that after the election 2 years ago, we started to see very substantial tariffs that were directly impacting the cost to build a home. So lumber was going up 30-40%, and you could say, yeah, that's $8,000 or $10,000 more in cost per home. At the same time, rates have been going up this year, mortgage rates, and so the monthly payment is getting tougher for the new home buyer to justify. And we started to see this over the last few months that buyers are staying on the sidelines to some degree. You couple with the higher cost with the fact that labor, the challenge there in my mind is more secular than cyclical. I think a lot of people thought that because we had such a strong big correction 10 years ago that labor left our industry and didn't come back. And I think it's a secular issue in that, in part because of the new president, that we can't bring in the undocumented laborers that we're so used to using in our industry, and in particular on the job sites, but also because so many young people are going to university now in America. I think I heard John being quoted last week saying that we have this new generation is the most educated generation. So there's so many different factors that are coming into play, and then you put capital with that. The sustainability of a business is always a function of the capital being available, and it's available now. And the partnerships, I love to see the partnerships between the building products companies and the builders so that they're really aligned in creating a better, more durable house, more energy efficient house that's also cost effective.
So it sounds like it's sort of, we've got this sort of swirl of money that wants to do it, of partners that are in place to do it. And a lot of it sounds like, if I'm reading it right, sort of necessity. We don't have, we need it because of the labor shortage. We need it to save money and pass it along to the consumer that's already stretched thin. Are those kind of the main catalysts that make it different this time?
Necessity breeds invention, right, Dean? And so that's it more than anything else.
Okay. So, okay. But, you know, let's be honest, there is a little bit of maybe stigma is too strong a word. Maybe it's not though, toward offsite, because people think of it, oh, that's manufactured housing or something like that. What are going to be the biggest hurdles to offsite this time around?
The concept of stigma around offsite is interesting because I think it's an excuse. It's kind of like the concrete industry in South Florida argues that stick built is not as hurricane resistant as concrete, but it actually is. It's been tested for decades. And so there's some funny stories coming from the RCI, Buddy Rainey in Central Florida, from his job sites recently, which is that consumers are going to a master plan and seeing that their house is taking weeks and weeks to get framed, whereas the house next to them is going up in 2 or 3 days. And they're saying, why can't mine be crane installed? So I don't think it's a stigma from the consumer. I think what I say about our industry is that we need so much more diversity in our thinking. We have an industry that's run by leadership that's very seasoned, very senior, and in some cases stale. It's primarily pale, and it's primarily Caucasian. And if you go to tech conferences, most people are a lot younger than we are. And it's not lost on me that I'm sitting here as a Gen Xer talking to an industry usually that's mainly baby boomers in the audience about millennials. But millennials are much more open to new technologies, and they actually expect it. You know, again, going back to the stigma question, if you were buying a phone today, are you going to go and buy the Nokia flip phone that you would have gotten 10 years ago? No. If you're buying a car today, are you going to buy the kind of car that you would have got 10 years ago? No. But why are we accepting that on a house? The houses, the technology isn't changing. You know, energy efficiency is super important, and it's great to see California mandating it. And actually, that government intervention is going to be another catalyst, because it was this year that California came out and said zero net energy homes by 2020. And they've relaxed that a little bit now. They're saying all solar. But and more homes that are built with a more energy efficient envelope, thermal envelope, will have lower bills per month. When you go to Europe, you get a HERS score. You can see that on your house. when you're buying it, you know exactly what your power and utility bill is going to month through the seasons. Yet we don't have that now on new houses or on old houses. So I think the difference between new and existing homes is not enough to support the difference in the average price right now. And that's another reason sales have slowed.
Okay. So effectively then maybe stick built becomes the BlackBerry of housing in 5 or 10 years from now. And we'll wonder why we ever did it that way.
Right.
I mean, is it right? And that's potentially true, isn't it?
I loved my BlackBerry and I still miss it.
I'm not going to lie. I love my BlackBerry. I was the last holdout at the company at the time for the BlackBerry, but I can't imagine using it. I can't imagine not having a smartphone. I feel like maybe that's the consumers in even the industry, builders in 10 years or something. Maybe that's too fast because this is going to be a little bit of a longer process, or maybe not. But, you know, we'll wonder why we didn't do this much earlier. And it's amazing how we waited so long to do it. And now it's so obvious that we should do it this way in 5 or 10 years. Because like you said, millennials are if they don't attach that kind of stigma to it, and they see it as being more efficient, more cost effective. Mm-hmm. It's kind of, you know, you're crazy not to do it. So we'll follow what the consumer says, as we should.
I think the consumer would prefer to not pay for all that waste in the dump site outside the new house and pay for a more energy efficient house with a HERS score. And that's the way our industry, our leadership needs to start thinking about this.
Could you even see the government intervention being the waste idea, mm-hmm. where, you know, here's the amount of waste we'll accept, and you can't get to that goal without being offsite.
In the United Kingdom, you're not allowed to have a dumpster on a job site, and all of the lumber is pre-cut, so there's no waste. You get fined if there's a dumpster. Here we motivate the framers, you know, to overbuy because we pay them by the yard or by the foot.
Yeah. That's going to change. It's going to have to. How about, you mentioned it a couple times. Let's focus on it for a moment. Affordability. I mean, affordability is the lack of affordability is a massively important issue in the U.S. with respect to the housing market, especially on the two coasts. Is that going to be a catalyst? Is this going to be something that could really, you know, have a real impact on that issue here and going forward?
You know, affordability is the consumer saying, no, I'm not going to buy the most expensive house. Prices have gone up too much over the last couple of months because the builders, starting in May, the lumber prices spiked and we saw a lot of price appreciation or an effort, price increases that didn't get realized because the market slowed as a result. But I do think that the affordability will be a part of it. And the buyer just saying, look, I need a smaller house. I mean, a simpler house. And again, your research team, John Burns' research team, has done a really nice job of outlining which of the builders are moving, like Horton Express and LGI is doing so well. These are very simple homes. They don't need all the options and upgrades and elevations. They just want an affordable monthly payment that feels reasonable to them.
Yeah, and they've been remarkably successful with that kind of model. I mean, like it makes perfect sense that offsite could be that part of a model for a lot of different builders now.
Yeah.
So kind of a two-part question here. Who are kind of some of the leaders right now in the U.S. for offsite? And as you mentioned a few times, it's already accepted in the norm in places like Japan and Europe. Are we going to have some disruption from those folks into the U.S. market with onsite as their sort of entree?
Yeah. So in terms of who's doing it in the U.S., BMC brought out a product called ReadyFrame a couple of years ago, and that has been very well accepted by builders. The only complaint I hear about is they can't get enough of it in all their markets. But BMC has a national footprint, and they're making ReadyFrame available through their dealers, and I think that's very smart. In some cases, they're installing it as well. The super subs like Buddy Rainey, RCI Construction in Central Florida are there. Louisiana Pacific has just invested in Entekra. I think the growth is going to be very accelerated from Entekra because they're working with the national builders in Northern California, and those builders are saying this is great. Like KB started using them in Northern California and then immediately rolled them out for the Vegas house. They actually drove that kit for the show house in Vegas 2019 from Modesto, California to Vegas because they really wanted to underscore how important it is to KB. So I think it's the builders that are going to invest in it. I think it's the products companies that are really going to be the independent third parties. A couple of builders have tried stuff like this before. Mixed Success, NVR, and Toll have done a phenomenal job of it for decades. You can see it in their profitability and their return on capital. I believe it'll be the third party in the U.S. and they're already there. In terms of the Japanese real estate companies, Japanese home building is dramatically different to the U.S. The country is very small. It's very mountainous. They build in very concentrated geographic markets. And in fact, Japan would fit inside of California. It's not that big. And it's got three times the population. And so with 120 million people. So it's modular is much more accepted in Japan. Full 3D closed panel modular is about 10% of the market there versus 2 here. And I don't think, I have not seen any of the Japanese companies talk to me or suggest that they want to invest in any of these opportunities. I have seen them buying well-run U.S. home builders. And actually, I think one of the stealth operators is Clayton Homes. I was in Knoxville a couple of weeks ago and spent a day touring some of their factories. It's phenomenal. They ship 5 finished houses a day at a wholesale cost of $50,000. Right. And they're, you know, they're well-made homes. They're well-sized homes. They're well-appointed. It's a company with a great brand, a great culture. They're owned by Berkshire Hathaway, who last time I checked had about $100 billion in cash on his balance sheet.
Has so, made some good decisions. You know,
yeah. They, I think they could buy the whole of the national publicly traded home builders if they felt like it. But they have a little bit of modular. They have a lot of manufactured housing. Obviously, they're the biggest in the country. And I think they are selling more than 5,000 stick-built homes now, based on the home builders that they've bought over the last couple of years.
Based on, now you mentioned some Japanese firms have bought into American home builders. Do you think they might inject some of that culture and some of those processes that way, or are they just really more relatively passive investors?
It would
I know that's speculation, but
yeah, it would be hard for them not to. Right now, they're just injecting capital that's very attractively priced relative to the cost of equity here in the U.S., public or private. And so I think that it'd be hard for the expertise not to rub off a little bit. I know that most of those companies that have been acquired by the Japanese real estate companies, those U.S. teams go back and forth to Japan a couple of times a year. And so I think they're looking at some of the best practices. I think that Japan is very, very different to the U.S.
Yeah. That makes sense.
In terms of the digitalization, you know, they can build a house in days in Japan. They quote a 50-60 delivery time, day delivery time, which is what they do in Europe as well. Whereas here we've gone from days to weeks to months, in some cases more than a year. And in part that's because of the lack of investment in research and development, in innovation. If you look, going back to the U.S., if you look at other public companies, leadership companies, consumer-oriented companies, they'll spend about 5% of revenue on R&D and new product development, whereas for U.S. construction, it's less than 50 basis points. And so wow. Just the digitalization would make it much more efficient.
Yeah, we do kind of rely on individual, in this case, builders, to do the kind of R&D on their own, as opposed to maybe a more concerted industry-wide effort with private-public partnerships. We just don't have that here, at least not in housing. So you don't get that kind of innovation, do you? Not naturally, I guess.
No, but that's why I think that 2018 is the inflection point. You've got some really smart prop tech investors like the guys at Fifth Wall who are investing, who are looking for new ideas. They got capital, I believe, from Lennar and Toll. And Open Door, you know, there are lots of new solutions that are coming. I also think that, I think Clayton is the one to watch versus the Japanese. But I think as an industry, the single family rental REITs have percolated into what I call B2R, built to rent, because they've run out of opportunities to buy homes at scale. And they're very efficient. They're very cash flow focused because they're looking at their month-to-month cash returns. And so they're adopting some of the offsite solutions more quickly than the traditional stick builders.
That makes a ton of sense, doesn't it? I mean, they don't have to worry so much. Now, to the degree they might, there is this consumer stigma again, and maybe there isn't anyway, but to the degree that they perceive that, the single family rental aren't really good. That's going to be much less of a factor for those folks, and cost is much more of a factor. I had not thought about that. That makes a ton of sense. For to the degree we see build to rent, offsite makes perfect sense, doesn't it?
Well, also building a very simple home, and they dictate how it gets back, not the consumer. So I think that helps with the efficiency, because then you can, the repetition helps any kind of automated process.
Definitely. And that renter is not having the same necessarily demands as the buyer is in that environment. Mm-hmm. Let's wrap this up with, let's get you uncomfortable here. We know there's going to be some winners. Let's go ahead and tell us who in this process of as offsite housing construction becomes more, a bigger part of the picture. Tell us who the winners are going to be, but tell us also maybe who might be the losers. I know we hate those terms, but who might lose out in this proposition?
Well, the opportunity is open. It's an open playing field right now. I think the greatest beneficiary will be the national home builders, and I hope that even if they decide not to invest in this directly, that they will partner and support the building products companies that are writing the checks so that they can build and sustainably offer these types of homes. I think the building products companies like Louisiana Pacific are really smart, really ahead of their time in terms of adopting. And that's in part because they have a global footprint. It's the same with CertainTeed and their investment this year. Beyond that, the losers, I haven't figured that out yet. It could be the lumber industry itself, because there are other, we haven't talked about as we've talked a lot about offsite and the process of offsite, but there are also products like HercuWall, which is a cement wall product, QuadLock, some other products like that are coming to the market that could displace some of the stick built altogether. And that in and of itself might make the lumber companies a little more innovative.
That's interesting. Do you think it's fair to say that the losers in this process are going to be folks who don't get on board?
I think that we're already seeing that, yes.
Okay. Well, Margaret, this was very insightful. I did introduce you as the legendary Margaret Whalen. I'm glad I did, because I think you lived up to it.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I enjoy your podcast, and thanks for including me today.
Well, thank you. And we loved having you. That's it for today. I'm your host, Dean Worley, with New Home Insights. Please join us next time. Margaret, please say goodbye.
Goodbye, everybody.